This is the 8th interview conducted with Barbara Nestor on February 25th, 1975, in her home. There was a long interruption since the last interview, which had been recorded in early January due to Barbara Nestor's illness. This interview contrasts rather sharply with the previous interviews in terms of her memory and also her grasp of the meaning of some of the questions. It does seem that her hearing presented more problems on this occasion, and that might be part of the problem. However, there seemed to be a difficulty at conceptualization very often compared to previous experiences. At times, it almost seemed as if she was not being candid. However, given knowledge of the interviewee and of the previous experiences, this is highly unlikely. Rather, her illness seemed to have had some effect on her memory. Although she was presumably better, there is some possibility that there were some lingering after effects from the severe cold that she had had.
But you know, I always tied it even to the doctor at the hospital. I tied it to Cannon Fodder. I said the only reason all of you are against it was that you want plenty of Cannon Fodder produced.
You would love the show that she did.
Yes, I would.
And I think the song fits so perfectly.
That's true. All of the other things, you know, that I didn't know enough about to tie them to, but then they tie to the military anyway, because the whole thing is geared. Right now what's going on is the Congress, the Senate, can refuse funds so they couldn't carry on these things that in Vietnam and everything. But have they voted against it?
They find another way.
Of course.
Okay. So would you sing the song for her then, and
yes,
then we can send it to her? Okay.
I didn't raise my boy to be a soldier. I brought him up to be my pride and joy. Who dares to put a musket on his shoulder and make him shoot some other mother's darling boy? Let nations arbitrate their future troubles. It's time to put away the sword and gun. There'd be no war today if mothers all would say, I didn't raise my boy to be a soldier.
Oh, that's a marvelous song. You once mentioned that during you saw a parade and you started singing it during the parade?
Well, I started singing it in my heart, at the women's meetings when the Red Cross head was there, you know, and she said, you know, I should report you, but I won't.
Was it a fairly popular song?
See, before we went into the war, it was sung all over. As soon as we entered the war, they imprisoned you if you sang it. But I sang it anyway.
It's too bad that it didn't keep alive as a song. It's a really good song.
Yes, okay.
It would have been nice to have used it during Vietnam, too.
Well, they did. I think they
oh, really?
Did. I think they did.
Oh, I don't remember hearing it.
Jane Fonda and Donald Sutherland came over here. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to ask questions of certain people that were coming up, you know. Jane Fonda is really a remarkable woman. She really is a remarkable woman. Although ever since she married Frank, whatever his name is.
Tom Hayden
hates the communists. So because Jane said I could come again, you know, and she kissed me very warmly, you know, and she was so touched that I asked about her little girl, Vanessa. I said, but Jane, I read everything I could about you, because these are the kind of Joan of Arc died for nothing. She put a worthless guy on the throne. But what you're doing is to keep people from dying, to make more millionaires, to make more desktops. So what you're doing is just really wonderful. And because of your reputation as an actress, as the daughter of Henry Fonda, you have an audience that you would otherwise not have. And that you felt so strongly about this that regardless of what happened to you, like when you kicked the policeman, I think it's wonderful. And also that you came and stood up about the injustice done to the Indians. That I think is remarkable, because I think too little has been done in that direction. And, you know, when she went away, she kissed me and she said, I'm coming again. But she never has, because Tom Hayden hates the communists. I said, Dorothy, does he hate you? Well, then he hates the communists. At that time, I was one of the heads of the Communist Party. But you see, I'm disappointed that Jane would allow anyone. Mm-hmm. If you can't say no, you can't tell me that, because regardless of what you feel about it, I do admire and like her.
Yeah.
And I think she's an honest person. Because she has nothing to gain by all the things she's doing.
Yeah.
So that's a weakness in her.
Well, you would think after all of this time that she would just do her own mind and not listen to her husband.
Yes.
Because she's come a long, long way as it is in terms of changing.
Well, and Don Sutherland, although he's a wonderful actor and he's a nice guy, he's socially minded, but yet he's not a good father.
Well, I understand he's not too nice a person, actually, too.
Well, he couldn't be and do the things he does. Now, if you wrote that thing in the magazine, you know, there, he was present at the birth of his other wife, you know, and it was an unforgettable experience, you know, and everything. But I don't think that's such a great thing, you know, that it makes him a very wonderful guy because he witnessed the way and suffered with her. You know,
Barbara, when we stopped last time, we were talking about the activities during World War II. And I want to review it. It's been so long since we talked.
Yes.
So I want to review, if you can review for me a little of that again. And then we'll go on up to the 50s today if we can.
Okay. Well, see, as soon as we got into the war in 1941, the communists supported the war again, you know, because it was against Hitler. And therefore then all the demonstrations were in support of the war. So we had really very little choice about it, no matter who was for it, you see. At that time, there was so much going on behind the scenes, because England's Lord Runciman, and I forget the other guy, who came to Czechoslovakia and told Benes, you know, that he could not have any interference to come to the aid of Czechoslovakia in case there was an attack against her, you know. And so England, as usual, played a double role, you know. In one breath, you know, she saw Hitler's expanding power and had a horror of the things that were happening. And yet in the other, she didn't want the communists to come in. So she played a double role in that, saying that we will not support you if you do this thing. And that was
Well, how did you define what would be the most effective activity during the war?
You found most effective, and this is one of the things that Carol Jean, my youngest daughter, and myself, and down to the people's world, because as soon as we entered the war, they stopped showing the Dr. Mamluk, you know, the anti-exoplate film, you know, and everything. And I said, what in the hell is this kind of a thing? It may be important to the state to minimize those things, and not, because now we're all fighting together. But we haven't become friends of Hitler. We haven't become afraid. Hitler is still the main enemy. And why don't you show Dr. Mamluk the war?
Was this during the Stalin-Hitler Pact period before we entered the war?
Before we entered the war, we didn't attack Stalin. We didn't attack Stalin. We accepted him and what he was doing, but it must be true. And I remember when just a few of us said, look what is going on. These people are not mercenaries, they're not traitors, they haven't sold out the Soviet Union. And when you read, you see, when they wrote The Fifth Center, it was my son, you know, who sold, and I told him to read it, and he read it. He said to me, have you read this thing? I said, I only skimmed through it. He says, well, damn it all, stop skimming and read it. Here they accused Trotsky of being the creator because his son was sitting on the steps of the Hotel Bristol in Denmark. How can a person be guilty because his son was on the steps of the... what's wrong with that? Then they say that the guy who had been a royalist soldier, I forgot now his name, the general, had been in England, but he had gone to... they said, come and see our officers' club. He said, with a note of regret in his voice, we don't have anything like that in the Soviet Union. How do you read a note of regret in a person's voice? They don't have anything like that in the Soviet Union, so he was stating a fact. So they make even a fact stand out as something pernicious, something disloyal and everything. And reading it all through, the attacks that are made against the general, it's really ridiculous. He had been an officer under the Tsar. He'd come over and been converted to Bolshevism and was fighting for the Bolsheviks. So when he was sent there to England as one of the guys with information, he had no role in directing the war or anything. He just merely said that they don't have the officers cut in the Soviet Union. And for that, you're going to condemn him and say he ought to die?
During the war, then?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes.
Well, what section of the party did you belong to in Los Angeles in that time period?
Southwest. Uh-huh. The Southwest section.
And how large was that group?
At that time, I think in our group itself, you know, those people who met were 14 or 15 or 16.
Mm-hmm.
And in every way, at that time, the party had really had a very large following.
Mm-hmm.
The anti-war thing, no doubt, was very, very prominent. And then the fact that, for the first time, they felt that anti-Semitism had been dealt a blow in the Soviet Union, because the Jews were the first ones to enlist against Hitler. And it wasn't until Dorothy, in 1961, went to Germany and to the Soviet Union that she met some of the former inmates of the camps, and they said, Dorothy, why didn't your party speak up against what Stalin was doing? She says, because we didn't believe it. We didn't believe that he was there. She says, you believe he was guilty of anything? She says, how could you believe that when the French comrade came and saw and published her? Didn't you believe the French comrade? She says, yeah, I guess not. She says, but how could you not believe a thing like that? What role did they have to play, the French comrade, in this exposing it? They tried very hard to find you, but Stalin was in with a terrible thing. So Dorothy said, well, history will perhaps forgive us, but at that time the Soviet Union was still beleaguered and everything, and that we couldn't attack her.
Mm-hmm. How about, in fact, Barbara, about the camps themselves? At what point did you first know about the concentration camps, the Nazi camps?
Well, it wasn't until quite a lot of time afterwards, you know.
So the party didn't have information that the rest of the public didn't accept?
If they did have, they never published it. See, until the Duclos letter came out, the Duclos letter came out and said that the things that had been published had been a declaration of policy, not a military fact.
But the Duclos letter, though, was after, wasn't it after the war?
Yes.
And Wilder was passed
then. Yeah.
So that, in effect, the members of the party did not necessarily have information that the general public didn't have.
No, they didn't have it, not at that time.
Well, in your study...
When the Duclos letter came out, and then it struck like a right at the heart, you know. Dorothy said that when she read the Duclos letter in New York and read that the letters that had been written to Stalin, one, dear Comrade Stalin, please stop the beatings. We can't stand anymore. You know we are not traitors. You know that we haven't betrayed the Soviet Union, that we haven't betrayed communism. Please, dear Comrade Stalin, stop the beatings. But he was supposed to have answered, beat and beat and beat again.
So it was with the Duclos letter then that all of that came out, in other words.
That's right. But you see, at the time, they were loath to believe a thing like that. They were loath to believe a thing like that, and it seemed as if it were an attack against the Soviet Union. But attacking Stalin is not attacking the Soviet Union, but so much had been... that he was a part of it. But even now they're trying to revive some of the respect for him. It's awfully hard to understand those things, you know. It's really very, very hard to understand those things. Well, it's hard to understand, although you can understand and forgive the version of hugging Nixon, because like the German guy who said, to stop fascism, I will unite with the devil himself. That's true, to stop fascism, but not to support fascism. And at that time, you see, it was so hard to know which were the lambs and which were the sheep. You see, one of the reasons when I never entered the party, he thought that when what was his name, the guy went with the poster to have Stalin declare which is right, Lovestone. And from that time on, Lovestone became a son of a bitch. About a steel pigeon, and just a really horrible guy. So then I said, why do you have to go, this is an American affair, why do you have to go to have Stalin settle it? You settle it, you have the facts and everything, you decide, not the Soviet, you decide your policy, because you're an American party, you're not a Russian party. And everybody, which I believe it. You know.
So up till then he was involved in the party?
He never had been a member of the party. And then when he read about the guy who was one of the heads, then Elizabeth Gurley Flynn was a friend of his. He had been in jail, and Bernard had heard him speak, and he was a good speaker. What was his name?
The one who jumped
in,
not Hayward.
No. The name slipped from me now. This guy who was, I'm trying to remember his name. But I find it hard to remember the name. But Lovestone, to become such a despicable character. So, all right, you try to find reasons why, but still it doesn't excuse him. If he was a man of real honest, he couldn't have done that no matter what was done. He could call attention, say he didn't like it. He didn't think the Soviet Union should be the one that consulted. But why did he go and help lay it before him? should have said, look, I don't believe in growing burgers. Why should we just put the bush down? Let us decide. But you know, it was a hard thing at that time. The decisions were made based really a great deal on emotion rather than on fact, really. And to do anything at all that seemed to reflect a weakening of your support of the Soviet Union was horrifying.
It was so, that operative during the war then, too.
It took quite a while even after the war, you know, to expose all the things that were going on, you know.
Well, Barbara, in the Southwest section then, would there be like the 13 or 14 of you who were very active, in other words? And then there were a large other group of people that you can call on to do things?
Well, they were called sympathizers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They were called communist sympathizers, and they supported the Communist Party loyally, but they were not themselves members.
Now, this is the period when still the party was out in the open, though, during the war.
Yeah.
What were the, like in that software section, what were the specific activities during the war that you engaged in?
Everything you see in the Soviet Union, they said everything for the front. And we thought the same way, everything to support the Soviet Union and to support the law. I mean, everything possible because you had it down in Hitler.
Do you recall any specific kinds of activities?
Well, the students went on, they picketed the, if anyone were lax or anything, they did some picketing. They wanted the professors to come out in open support, you know, and everything. Well, the professors did support the war.
Mm-hmm.
The colleges supported the war.
Mm-hmm.
More than Roosevelt was there then. And, you know, really, Roosevelt was a son of a bitch himself. And he refused to have those 1,500 victims of Hitler to land in New York. Can history ever forgive him for that?
But you, in other words, your group was involved in whatever activities were going on. You didn't necessarily initiate them and try and draw people into your
As a matter of fact, I remember that when the Israelis won, and on the at that time there was a demonstration in favor of it, so that one of the colonels said, you know, isn't it wonderful to be on the side now that we don't have to fight against the government, that they're also supporting us also, and I stand, because when Israel still won, most of the people were very glad that Israel won, you know. After it came, you know, the poor Arabs, you know, they had been defrauded of their homes and everything.
Now, this was in 47 or 48, though, you're talking about.
Yes, this.
Well, during, in your Southwest section, were most of your friends and most of your social life tied up with your section, or did it extend beyond it?
No, we were pretty much controlled, really, by the main section that came down. The mandate came down from New York, and we more or less carried them out, and that's all.
Did most of the people in your section over the years, is that when you rejoined the party, is that the section you went into right away?
Well, I had never really, we had still functioned, you know, in a way we had still had meetings, even though it had, you know, we had stopped, but we still had meetings, you know, and everything, and we more or less carried out the things that New York had sponsored.
But of your group of 13 or 14 over the years, say since the 30s, did you all stick together, or did some of the people, like, with defect at various points, like, say, first with the Khrushchev revelations, and then first with Hungary, then with Khrushchev, and then eventually with Czechoslovakia. What happened to this core group of you?
Most, as I remember, most of them went along with Khrushchev and went along with most of that. They went along with it. They didn't fight against it. I don't remember any group being anti-Khrushchev.
But right after the Khrushchev revelations is when so many people left the party. Of your group in the Southwest section, no one left?
Very few in our group left. And before this happened, 22 prominent communists had left the party. Henry Steinberg and Celeste, you know, who had been the darling because she had been the spokesman and had gone to Hawaii, then a miracle happened in Hawaii because though she couldn't get pregnant, she wanted a child very much, she loves children. Suddenly she got pregnant and her husband was there with her and everything, and she has Annie. Really a very delightful little girl.
Now, so she was in your section?
She belonged to a section in Hollywood.
Oh.
And everything. But she was one of the spokesmen, one of the bright lights of the young people, you know, and was looked upon as a spokesman for the Communist Party. And she was a brilliant orator. I don't remember that she was so brilliant, but...
Well, Barbara, what I'm trying to get at is actually during, over the years, how close-knit your group was. Most of your life revolve around those 13 or 14 people, or did you have, was this just one small aspect of your life and your social life?
No, it was never a small aspect. It was always a very prominent, if not the dominating. It was very close to being the dominating influence in my life, yes. Because I thought that capitalism was so horrible that everything must be done to change the system. And when Marx said it isn't enough to criticize the system, but to change it. And that I thought was really very important.
Well, did that mean then that the group was, your primary body of friends were from that group as well?
But most of them went along with that. Very few. I remember when, who had been an artist and everything, you remember the name, and he was one of the next Browder and a friend of Browder's, you know. He had been a very noted artist. And he had come to our place where we lived on Pearson Street, and we had what we called the colony, and stayed there, you know. And, what was his name? And he spoke here at the Shrine Auditorium, and I sold some tickets to some people. And then he said that we should still support the capital system under that because it still had something good to offer to us, and we shouldn't throw out we should use it for the good. And I remember this woman said, "This capital system still has some good in it, but it uses thousands of people. Where has capitalism?" She says, "You know, I feel like killing you." I said, "Look, I only sold you a ticket. I didn't know what he was going to say any more than..." And you ought to be glad that you got a ticket so you knew what to fight against. Are you blaming me? Because he didn't... And I know that I knew him then. Ann Trujan was one of the diehards of Czechoslovakian. Her mother had been a communist. But the real strict kind, she felt if you mentioned the Catholic Church, who said, "If you're still a member of the Catholic Church, you're a son of a bitch, because they are the root of all evil and everything." She couldn't hear anything said good for out of them. So Ann Trojan said to me, "Well, but look, he's one of the heads of the party. How can you criticize him?" I said, "Well, you have to know that he's saying doesn't necessarily mean everything that you go along with." You know, really almost like before this, the same thing that it says come up now, that you don't criticize and that you don't understand, that you're not going to just take orders to be a certain thing. You have to understand what's going on, and you don't go along with that. She says, "But do you criticize the leaders of the Communist Party?" I said, "Anne, you try to understand what the Communist Party leaders are doing. But that doesn't mean that there are Lenin, and even Lenin never said that you shouldn't." See, when he said every kitchen must be able to run the state, He didn't say that every kitchenmaid must have to use the best cup of pie, only that you must have to understand what's going on so you know how to act in whose interest are you going to act. In the interest of the workers or in some interest that they have over and above that. And I said, that's what it means. And whenever you hear something discussed that goes beyond that, you ought to hear it. I said, oh, but you can't. I said, Anne, you already sound like a Catholic.
Father, when would this have been? Was this right after the war, or is this the war?
It was shortly after the war. It was shortly after the war.
It was part of the Browder line?
Yes, it was still, yes, yes. The Browder still is there.
Well, was Antrobe in your southwest section?
Yes.
Because you've mentioned doing very kind of activities.
Yeah, yes. When I first met her, she had just been married a short time before that. She was 24 years old. And she wanted to go along with me when I spoke to the principal or even the parent teachers, you know, how to do it, how to get up and she called brazen it out. I said, not brazen it out, just give them the facts. And I could do that. But at the parent teachers, see, one of the heads of the parent teachers was a woman by the name and she became a very dear friend of mine. And she never was a communist, but she was sympathetic to the communists. And she was giving me many information how to go about it. And she says, you know, they don't let you speak.
Oh, right.
But if you get up and demand it and everything.
Who were some of the others in that section that you worked with then?
One of them was the one who... I left her husband, and her husband is a very wonderful guy, and she gave birth to a black baby, so while he was in the army, you know.
How old was she? Was she a young woman, too?
She's about 26.
Were there other people your age in your group, or were they maybe
younger? Oh, yes. Some were younger.
Mm-hmm.
Some were my age, you know, but...
There was never a thing made out of age within the group. I mean, your friends spanned all ages.
What?
Your friends spanned all ages. There was never an age distinction within your group.
No. No, that's very true. But, you see, the only difference was that some never got to the point of any critical aspect of it at all. And no matter what the Soviet year, they would be across that way with me, yet will I believe in thee. You know, some were like that, and some did believe in me. Because 22 days that Celeste and Henry Steinberg, and those are about the names I remember the most, but they were all friends of Dorothy. And because they were still continuing to be friends of Dorothy, Dorothy was called on the carpet. Why was she still friends? I said, look, they have left the party, but they haven't become the enemy. So they're still my friends, and maybe they still believe in social. Well, if they still believe in social, why did they leave? Well, evidently, for some of the policies they questioned and everything. And I have to get the list from Dorothy. Dorothy,
this is the group that left right after 54?
Yes. Uh-huh. And they were the bright lights in the party. Uh-huh.
Well,
left especially.
But none of them came out of your Southwest group?
No.
They all stayed?
Oh, they all stayed.
Well, Barbara, since were you viewed as the sort of elder, respected communist in your group? Were you the longest-term member?
I was a charter member, so, you know, I had long been part of this first form. And that's why they had all those affairs. All of them were to raise money, you know, for nothing else, and I hated them. I just hated them. When one of the young guys, James Ayers, got up and said, Barbara's our leader. And I said, I've never been a leader in all my life. I've never been a leader. I have been a Jimmy Higgins. I carried out things. I didn't organize or initiate policies. You know, this sounds, it just makes me sick. And it's not my fault, because I'm not here trying to say Linda Falk's colors. But I never was a leader, and I hate this kind of a thing. I really did. I just shriveled up when I heard it, because it wasn't true. But I'll tell you one thing that was true. Because I had been a charter member, and because I had been in the some of the stormy chapters of the party, and everything, so when I did speak, you know, or when I went to see any of the prisoners and anything, well, then, you know, they did want someone who knew what the, all the passages mm-hmm. there were and everything. For instance, like they had to get someone to review the book about India, the Mother India by Catherine, I've got her last name now. Yeah, now. So you had to know something about it. So they asked me to review the book. So I said, you know, after the, but Captain Mayo, whatever her name was, doesn't begin. For 300 years, India lived, England lived on the Indian people. And there's no doubt of that at all. And they didn't bring that in. So after 300 years, most of the population is still illiterate, starving, famine, and everything else. What did England do for India? And everything. And then they go and begin that there was a book that followed it, A Son of Mother India Answers Catherine Neal something. And she said, if I were to write a book about the United States, I would have to tell them that the United States, they are a marvelous country for democracy. It wasn't democracy everywhere. I would have to tell them down in the South, they treat people like cattle, worse. They treat cattle better than that. I would have to tell them that in New York, I saw people eating out of garbage cans. I would have to tell them that girls sold their bodies to practice prostitution because they had no way of eating without it. Those were all things that were happening in the richest country in the world, a populous country, but it wouldn't be the whole history. I would have to include some who were fighting against these very things, you know. And so when Catherine writes this book about Mother India, she doesn't say that England kept the people in ignorance there. Which they have done. How did they keep the royal family there?
Well, where did you review this?
At one of the meetings at one of the halls. We had a forum then, meeting every Saturday. First it was at that restaurant by that guy who was supposed to be kind of he was religious, but yet he allowed the communists to speak there, and I met some of them, you know, and they had this forum, so it was for that forum. And they asked questions.
Uh-huh. But it wasn't just the communists, it was a large,
it was a forum.
Uh-huh. Well, Barbara, during the wars when Richard was born, then how did that affect your activities once you were taking care of him?
Well, you see, when Richard was born, of course, Don was in the army, and Dorothy, head of the Miners and Smelters Union, came and said to Dorothy, you've got to come back and be the organizer of the union. Because, you know, most of our guys are either in jail or...
Mm-hmm.
So she said, well, I have a 7 or 8 month old baby. He said, Barbara, will you take care of little Richard so Dorothy can come back in the union? I said, you know, I will. Anything that helps the union, I will do. So I took care of Richard. But more or less, you see, Dan was still there. So if at night if I had to go anywhere, Dan was there. Dan was there with Richard. And if I had to go in the afternoon, Dan would be there if I had to. So it didn't really do an awful lot. But
it's not like when your own children were young and you cut out activities because Dan was there to take care of
them. Well, you see, with my own children, it was a little different. My the youngest one was a baby. And the other children were too young to have them look out for her.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, there was no question of it. And if I were in it, I would have to do it. So the only thing that I always kept up was
the ILD.
The ILD. That I kept up all the time.
But with Richard, Dan was always around, so you felt okay then about being He wasn't involved in your Southwest section, in other words, then.
Richard?
Dan.
Oh, Dan, yes, he was. He was a member, but not in my group. They thought it was not a good thing for there, so he belonged to a group further east.
Oh, I see. But if...
Really, more of the rocks group.
But if something came up, you were the one more likely to go, and he would watch Richard than his going and your staying home.
Yeah.
I see. Because I wondered what you did about Richard being taken care of and how it affected your activities during the war.
You see, now, we had at that time that Saturday and Sunday you went ahead with the People's World, especially in United Watts. We felt they needed care more than anyone else. And I hated doing it, but I was really very good at it because I could sell more of the People's World or do the best for it because I read it. You know, I found out one thing, Shona, that if you want to get people interested in something, you have to know something about it, you know. You have to read. Many of the people who have